Hi, and welcome to the Friday Coffee Meetup Podcast for Friday, September 20th, 2019. On today's episode, we'll hear from James Ganko, CEO and founder of The Guestbook, on taking bold risks to improve the hotel guest experience. The Friday Coffee Meetup Podcast is brought to you by Echo Factory, a Pasadena-based marketing and advertising agency that specializes helping healthcare, consumer goods, clean tech, and aerospace companies achieve rapid, sustainable growth. Echo Factory CEO Mike Schaefer is a co-founder and organizer of Friday Coffee Meetup. If you're interested in how Echo Factory can help your company achieve rapid, sustainable growth, you can learn more at echo-factory.com. Every week, the Friday Coffee Meetup brings together innovators, startups, investors, tech companies, and entrepreneurs at the cross-campus co-working space in Pasadena. You can learn about upcoming meetups and how you can attend in person at fridaycoffeemeetup.com. Now, here's James Gankos with this week's presentation.
Thanks, Mike. So Mike told me there's a lot of hotel people in this crowd, but speaking to everyone beforehand, that's not true. So I don't know if the presentation has any relevance anymore. But we'll try. We'll try and wing it. I'll go more into my background kind of mid-presentation. But before getting into the hotel business, I was a management consultant. And I learned once I got in the hotel business that cocktail parties were so much more interesting talking to people because they, although they love to hear about management consulting, hotels is something they could relate to a little bit better. So I'm going to meander a little bit, talk a little bit about the hotel industry before talking about my business, but then I'm just going to kind of go into the business side after and hit a lot of Q&A. So without further ado, I'll get started. So this is a story about innovation, and I love this quote, take time to notice the things that other people are overlooking. Back in 1998, a gentleman by the name of Barry Sternlicht was a real estate guy, and he bought two companies that year. One was Sheraton, ITT Sheraton, and one was Westin. And he put those two companies together and what was then to become called Starwood Hotels. And Barry was this real estate guy, and he was trying to make a name for himself, and now he has these two operating companies of hotels. And he was trying to think, what's my big thing going to be that shows the industry that I'm not just some real estate guy, that I actually like hotels? And so he looked around, and he actually drew inspiration from his bedroom. He said, you know what, I really like the bed in my master bedroom up in Greenwich, Connecticut, or somewhere like that. And I don't like any of the beds in hotels. You know, they just don't do it for me. And so he basically went about, and he went to his hotel team. Actually, he went to the Westin team, and he said, hey, guys, here's a picture of my bed. Let's put this in all of our hotels. And they said, Barry. And by the way, Barry is a very opinionated guy, so they had to do this very softly, right? They said, Barry, that bed is white. That is, you cannot put that in a hotel. It's going to be dirty every day. We're going to have to wash every day. The housekeeping team, by the way, is like, and by the way, my bed, not only is it white, but it has like two sets of extra sheets that no other bed ever had, right? So then the operations side of hotels said, well, yeah, it's going to be a big problem with housekeeping because they only have a certain amount of time to clean the room and these two extra sheets times number of rooms, times number of hotels. Like, this is crazy. The unions are going to get involved. You know, no one's going to go for this thing. You're just crazy, Barry. He said, no, we're going to do this. And so he ended up coming up with this bed and with his team. And he said, we got to go out there and, you know, take this on parade. And they're like, all the hotel people are kind of cringing. Like, we can't go out there to our other hoteliers and show we're going to do this white bed. And they went to the New York Stock Exchange and like had it on display. They went to the Seattle Space and had it on display. Went to Grand Central Station, had it on display. And this was the Westin Heavenly Bed. And again, the year was 1998. So pretty much as expected, every hotelier in the world said, this guy's crazy. What's he thinking? And nonetheless, he said, well, I own this hotel company now, so we're going to put it out to all the Westins. And they did it, right? He just like brute forced it through. And fast forward 5 years later, so it's 2004, Westin does a press release kind of remembering the launch of the West and Heavenly Bed. And by that time, 19 million people slept on it. 30,000 people actually asked to buy it, which like never happened with a hotel before. And it basically changed the entire industry, because here was this guy who came out and said, you know what, a bed's probably important for the hotel experience, but yet no hotelier wanted to ever innovate on that. And these are what pictures, these are actually luxury hotels, right? I think like one's a Four Seasons, one's a Ritz-Carlton. Thus, all the beds used to look like this. There were these like ugly kind of polyester, either patterned or like some type of tan or something like that, so nothing would get dirty, right? And basically, I did a Google yesterday. So pre-1998, you probably, if you Googled that, well, you might be using some different search engine, but you probably get a page of like all these colors and polyester and stuff like that. And this is what you see. This is just a hotel bed, right? Basically, the entire industry changed because of this. What was the stupidest idea ever becomes something so obvious. And, you know, it just goes to show you that, you know, there's places for innovation everywhere, and it might be right under your nose. And does anyone know what the real insight of the Westin Heavenly Bed was? Whoops, shoot. Don't read that. I thought I had it staged. It was, yeah.
The guests want to easily verify.
Yeah. It was all about cleanliness, right? Because people going into hotel beds before, the first thing they'd want to do is just rip off that thing and throw it in the corner, and you might still do that with like the decorative pillow, right? But it wasn't about, I mean, the great night's sleep, the fluffiness was amazing, but the reason why this page is here, why every bed is pretty much white now with just a little accent throw, is because people want to verify cleanliness. And that's an interesting thing about innovation, is oftentimes you don't end up where you started. You know, you go with one thing and you learn something else. So, my name's James, Jim Gankos. I got into the hotel business back in 2003, and I was a management consultant first. I went to business school, and then I basically said, you know what, I really like this hotel business as a person. Like, I love to travel. I love hosting people. I love working with people that kind of cross the spectrum, you know, blue collar to white collar. And it just seemed like my calling, and I went where... you know, most people from hotel business either worked their way up or they came from Cornell Hotel School. I didn't go to either of those. But I said, I want to be in the hotel business. So I networked my way into Starwood, North America, and I was director of operations for North America, which is kind of more like a financy, budgeting, you know, type role, because it was my only way to kind of get my foot in the door in this work your way up industry. But my real passion was to be in this industry long term. And I said, you know what? I want to do this job, but you have to promise me that after a couple years in corporate, I get to go out to be in the hotels, because that's where the stuff really happens. That's where learnings really happen. And so I did that, and this is kind of my trajectory. So first up in White Plains, New York. Then I went from Manhattan to an island of 60,000 people, Sheraton Kauai Resort. That was my first hotel job as hotel manager. From there, I went to Sheraton Seattle as hotel manager. Then I became the general manager of Planet Hollywood Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, which was used to be a Starwood hotel, Starwood managed hotel. And I think I was 30 at the time, and it was Starwood's largest hotel. So an amazing opportunity. Then Starwood left Planet Hollywood in the downturn, and I went to W Istanbul. I wanted to get some European experience, and I got into Europe by about 100 yards. It was right on the Bosphorus next to Asia. Amazing experience. And then I moved to one of my favorite hotels as a consumer, the W Los Angeles. I think they call it West Beverly Hills now. It used to be called W Los Angeles Westwood, but they decided to make up a fictitious name for the travelers who know Beverly Hills. So I'm kind of dedicated to hotel business for my life. And one of the things that I noticed once I got in there was, you know, innovation is really tough in this business. Not many things change. And I kind of observed what was the reason for that. And it comes down to a few things. So every industry has innovation challenges because they're so in it, right? People who are at the top have usually been in it the longest. They overlook things. But hotels have this very specific set of extra innovation challenges. First one is no time. Pretty much everyone on property where they're going to witness things that guests want or don't want or like or dislike, they all spend 80% of their time fighting fires in the day. The other 20% of the time, they have to do like all of their stuff for corporate. So there's no time to, you know, mess around, think about new things. Second one is there's no budget. A lot of people who sell to the hotel business are like, wow, there's so much money going through these places. I can make a product and sell to these guys. But really, when you think about it, these assets are traded on multiples of EBITDA. So every expense counts. And usually it's a real estate play. So there's no budget to do anything new. Tightly coupled operation. So if you change something at the front desk, it impacts housekeeping, which impacts the valet, whatever. It's very tightly coupled, much more so than other industries, because people are there with you 24 hours a day. And one mistake carries through. One lack of communication is recognized. And finally, there's this tenure-based promotion track where people kind of start at the front desk and then, you know, work their way up to a management level position. Then they move across a function. They spend about 3 years doing that. And then it's like, okay, time for Jim to go to the next hotel, which is a little bit nicer or a little bit bigger, to get more experience. They spend 3 years there. They go to the next one, eventually end up at the GM level, and maybe they go up to corporate. So this career path that doesn't reward innovation, unfortunately, kind of stymies innovation in the industry. So nonetheless, there are some good examples of innovation. So we already talked about Barry Sternlicht and the white bed. I'll just share a few more that I really like. He also invented W hotels. And he invented the no blackout dates on loyalty programs. So before that, you know, it'd be like, hey, I have all these points and I can't use them anywhere that I want to use them. And he came out and marketed that. And that's what made SPG become the most popular loyalty program for hardcore travelers. Of course, now owned by Marriott. Ian Schrager, he invented the boutique hotel. And when he was looking around in the 90s, he said, and this is a club guy, right, Studio 54, he said, you know what, hotels need some social interaction. This is a great spot to have social interaction. And if they're going to have social interaction, they need nice design around them to inspire conversation. And it was basically those two ideas of social interaction and design that led to the first boutique hotels. It was Morgan's, it was Delano and South Beach, things like this. And then from a service side, Hort Schulze, he's the guy who's kind of credited with creating Ritz-Carlton, and he came up with the credo that many of you may have seen this before, ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. And that was something that was a great innovation because it inspired the people who worked at the hotels about what their own path was, what their fulfillment was, and it really created a different way of thinking about their role in society. So I think that's a great innovation to highlight too. So I was out in these hotels. I was at Sheraton Kauai Resort, and I said, okay, you know, I have this business school background, and I'm now in my hotel, and I want to try and innovate something in this business. And so we had this guy, Keith Vieira, who was based in Honolulu, and he was a regional. He'd fly around the islands and come visit and give pep talks to the management. And one of the things he'd always say was, hey, I am so upset because I always try and participate in these green programs. I put the card on my bed, you know, I don't put it on the bed, and I'm trying to get them to not wash my bed, wash my sheets. And yet every day I put a little pencil on the corner of the sheet, and sure enough, it's changed out, right? So here we are trying to be green. It's Hawaii. Conservation's important. And no one's fulfilling this promise of the green card. So I took that to heart because I heard him say it like 5 times. He didn't have that many messages. That was a lasting one. And so I sat with my team and we said, okay, how can we help people execute on this program? And it came down to, we said, okay, the only way we can stop people from cleaning the sheets when they're asking to not be cleaned is don't let housekeeping team in the first place. Because then they can't change the sheets, right? So we said, how do we do that? Well, let's change this card into a door hanger that says, don't service my room today. And we'll give you there. It was a free buffet breakfast as a thank you for doing that. And so we rolled it out. And then we quickly learned what became the program called Make a Green Choice, which now pretty much, I mean, a lot of hotels do this, is that people were very happy to be rewarded for being green. They're like, wow, that's so great. Instead of just savings going to the hotel for being green, I actually get something back for it. So it's a win-win-win, it seems like to me, right? And when we rolled this out to the whole hotel, we actually had another insight that was really interesting, and I think this is why it became such a popular program. Can anyone guess what that insight was? So I can decline housekeeping altogether. I can get some rewards for it or cash. Anyone? Yes. Yes, that's very close. Okay, this is where I have my question mark. There are a lot of guests who don't want their room cleaned every day anyways. All these road warriors, they have a little carry-on. They just keep their thing in their bag. They put some toiletries on the bed. And they're like, there's these, Flyer Talk was this board at the time. This is like 2008 we were doing this. We had 5 pages of comments. And pretty much the resounding thing was, I didn't want my room cleaned anyway. And here it was that for probably 2,000 years or however long hotels have been around, like, you have to clean the room every day. That is a God-given right for the guests. They have to have that room cleaned. And when we saw these comments about people not wanting their room cleaned, we're like, wow, that is so interesting, right? We tried to innovate on this green program. We realized that we uncovered this truth that everyone's been overlooking. Don't clean the room. And so some of you may have used this program at one point in time. So that innovation got me thinking, when I was at W Istanbul, I started thinking about this problem and hotel loyalty programs. Basically, in hotel school, I didn't go to hotel school, but I know that they teach this. It is the economics of a loyalty program, how you design a loyalty program. And it kind of looks like this. This is the number of stays and nights, and that's the value to the member. As you stay more, you start getting more. Right, and those guests, they're paying in every time to the pot. The guests that don't get anything, haven't stayed enough, are paying for these hardcore travelers over here. And I said, what about all these people that are staying with us 1-2 times? What are we saying to them when they don't ever get anything for their stay? Are we recognizing them? Is that what they want? They want to just wait and see if they stay that many times. And so I took that to heart. Sorry, you guys can't see. Yeah. So I started thinking about that. It took me a few years of thinking about it. I even brought it up to our CEO once, and I was like, what are we going to do for all these guys that just stay a couple times? What's in it for them, right? And kind of he liked Loyalty 101 a lot. So about this time, this is 2013, I started seeing these commercials that were, I think I probably took the wrong one, from Capital One. And, you know, they're talking about all this cash back stuff. And it really became, I mean, these commercials were everywhere. You guys probably remember back then. I mean, they're still everywhere. But back then, they were really, it was like every commercial. And I said, you know what? What if there's something in it? What if there's something in this, like, instant gratification cash back thing for hotel guests? Could that be done? Would it be interesting for people? You know, what would they say? Would it change their behavior? Could you afford to do it as a hotel? Because obviously, if you give value to those guys on the left side of that chart, you know, it's either going to take away from the right side or you got to ask for more money from the hotel to pay into it. And it turns out, this is when I said, hey, I can't do this at Starwood because basically they have a loyalty program and the CEO told me he's not really concerned about those guests. So I said, I have to go pursue this on my own. And I went out and I raised some friends and family money to go start what is now the guest book, to basically take Samuel Jackson here and apply it to the left side of that loyalty chart. And what we came up with was a cash back model for hotel stays, which is the foundation for the guest book. Basically, this is our current offering of options. So you get 5% cash back via PayPal or gift cards, even on your first stay. So loyalty as a service, rewards as a service model. You can choose to donate that to a cause through our partner Global Giving, which has thousands of highly qualified charities and projects. Or something I added in a little bit later as we started growing hotels was you can get 15% towards another hotel in our network. We call it cash forward. We just started calling that actually. Turns out that this model was really well received by guests. And we actually came across a survey about 2 years ago. It was done by Nielsen, Global Loyalty Sentiment. And back in 2013, this wasn't around. Basically, it said, hey, cash back or rebates is the most wanted reward value, if you will, for a frequent purchase. I think this is across all industries, way more than points and even slightly more than discounts, interestingly. And I think the reason for that is people don't always know if discounts are real or if it's just marked up to be marked down. But something about cash back makes you feel good, makes you feel recognized. It's real value coming back to you. And then basically, people just say, just give me the cash. So the real insight about this that we came through with multiple guests changing their behavior, staying more often at these hotels, was that people just want to feel appreciated. Very simple observation, and they didn't feel appreciated on their existing models. The hardcore travelers did. The occasional travelers didn't. So we said, okay, now can the hotels afford this thing because you got to pay more in? And it turns out there's a great reason why they can afford to pay more, and that is online travel sites. This is a little hard to see from where you are. Basically, if I have like an $800 stay and I book it on Expedia, Expedia is going to get about $140. It's 25% commission. This is for independent hotels. They advertise free, but it actually costs the hotels a lot. So if I can incentivize people to book on the hotel site, which is what our platform does, they can save that $140. They can pay the 5% to the guest and 3% to us for giving that service. So turns out the ROI is actually very high because of this big imbalance of commissions. So it works. And then today we have over 700, I think we're at 740 hotels in 75 countries. We're the largest rewards platform for independent boutiques in the world. We just passed Preferred Hotels recently, which was the largest. And so we're all over. I just highlighted a few in Los Angeles that you may recognize some of these. So this is the Los Angeles area. I'm not going to read them all out. So we're about 60% in the U.S., 40% international. Most people kind of don't think there are that many independent hotels in the world. Actually are. So two-thirds of all hotels in the world are actually independents, even though you always hear about the chains. We're trying to make a difference in that perception. So just a couple more things about how we work. So we sit on the hotel's booking engine with an overlay, script-based overlay, and we offer the cash rewards. So when they're browsing around, they see, oh, same price as Expedia, but I get this extra stuff. We're actually able to capture the reservation, then immediately execute the reward. Whoops. And we have a whole suite of tools that helps them get the cash rewards, instant value message out there. One of the really exciting things is that Google just started doing hotel searches. If you guys Google hotel, you'll see on the right. And it gives you some real estate if you hit the top spot to put additional wording. And it's really giving great visibility to this. So we can say earn 15% cash rewards right when you're looking. And it's like, okay, everyone's at 139 in this case, and plus 15% cash rewards at the official site. Let me go click on that one, right? So it just really helps with the ROI. I mean, it was already great. Now it's going through the roof for hotels. And I'll give you one other innovation my company's working on that's still like not quite innovation yet, but it's I'll tell you what we're trying to solve, and maybe you guys can give me some ideas afterwards. Booking hotels is actually a pretty laborious process. If you're doing it for work, you're just like, give me the most convenient, use my app, whatever. But if you're doing a family vacation or something like that, it actually can be very stressful. So this is from a Google Focusrite travel study that people spend a lot of time looking how to book, where they're going to book, how they're going to book. And they feel like they have to check way too many places. This is hard to believe, but I'm sure maybe it's not quite this high, but this is what it said. 42% of travelers say planning a vacation is one of their biggest stresses. Is planning a vacation a stress for any of you guys? Okay, probably 30%. So we saw this problem and we said, hey, what's the core of this thing? How can we help? And we came up with a browser extension. Since Honey's in the LA area, you guys know Honey. Basically, it's a browser extension. And what it does, it's called Gopher. And if you have it, when you're on Expedia or on booking.com or hotels.com or Hotel Tonight or whatever, on the website, desktop website, doesn't work on mobile yet, it will see the hotel you're looking at and go ping the hotel direct site behind the scenes and bring back the rate so you don't have to go Google it and re-enter dates for yourself. And I mean, over half the time these days, the hotel's direct site is cheaper than those sites. Plus, we're a cashback company, so we give some extra cash back for it. But this has been the message. We don't want to spend money on this. We want to spread viral, and we haven't got that yet. So we've been iterating it for like a year. We've been focusing on the cash back. We're going to try and focus more on the visibility. With that survey saying people don't want to spend all that time. But I think one day we'll crack it and it'll be big, but I just can't talk about it yet. Luckily, the guest book is big enough now that it can fund side research projects like Gopher. But anyways, give me some ideas after the fact. So this is just my innovation advice, and then we can do more questions on the company. Focus on the customer experience, number one. That's where the insights come from. That's why being at a hotel was so important. You can't really do it from corporate that much. You got to be there and see what people are saying. Don't be afraid to question the fundamental concepts. Usually that's where the biggest innovation comes from. People just take it for granted that that is the way it is. It's never going to change. Beds have to be, you know, tan so it hides the dirt and you don't have to wash this thing. But when you come along and question those things, that's where big innovation comes from. And then finally, even failure will propel your career. I try to, in this talk of innovation, I've changed a little bit for you guys, but I try to inspire hoteliers that take 3 years, wait their time, go to the next thing to be innovative because they can actually accelerate their career. As uninnovative as it is, when someone does try innovation in the hotel business, even when it fails, they're actually recognized tremendously, but that message is not out there. So that's one of my goals as a hotel person trying to give back. So I think that wraps up my presentation, but I'd love to get into more of the business side of things and answer your questions. We've been around 6 years. Team is 30 now. We're based in West Hollywood. We got to profitability last year. We took some additional investment for existing investors, and we're almost back to profitability again with some additional growth. Yes?
Would a franchise flag get into trouble if they adopt
your system? Hang on to that question real quick. Thank you, Jim.
Yep.
So we'll do a formal Q&A. I'm going to hand the microphone to John. This is a great time to ask Jim about his innovation, the guest book. Not a great time to talk about your terrible guest experience or how your white bed was not white when you stayed in it. So John, here's the mic.
But tell me that afterwards. I'm all ears always.
There you go. You can repeat your question.
Thank you. Just wondering, would a given franchise flag location get in trouble if they try to adopt your system?
Currently, yes, because it has its own network of hotels. But we are very close to launching our first white label product for a group of hotels, and we're trying to figure out a way to work that in with some of the chains too. But it's a little hard to do, right? The loyalty program is the most important part of a chain. So we have work to do.
That was fantastic.
Thanks.
I think you're sitting on a gold mine. I have 100 questions, but I'm going to ask two. I've been involved in designing half a dozen loyalty programs for companies, and as you said, the whole model is based on breakage, right? That the low-value customers pay for the high-value customers. If you're pushing a 5% automatic cash rebate on 100% of customers, how do the clients feel about that? Because it's basically a 5% discount automatic. And two, what is your business model? What piece of the pie are you taking?
Great question. So, interestingly, even with cash back presented in your face, not everyone actually claims that. So the breakage is still there, but for people who do want value, it's there. That's the important point. So the economics, because of the commission arbitrage, we can increase conversion on a website substantially more than it costs to pay for it. So we see that about 25 to 30% of the people ultimately claim the reward, and that's the only time we build a hotel for it.
25% do claim the reward?
Do claim. Of all the
points.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. So we have a two-step process. Click the button to click the box to enroll in the booking process, and you have to follow up to confirm your account. If you don't do both those, we don't bill. But yeah, 25 about is what people do.
Your business model.
So we charge. I went by it real quick. The hotel reimburses the 5 plus 3. So we get 7% or 8% of the transaction of someone who uses the program.
You get a finder's fee for people who
find the hotel? Do you get a finder's fee for people who find the hotel through your search?
No, but what we do now, so now that our network's big enough, we have 1 million people that have signed up from the hotels bringing them to us. We have no, we never spent money on marketing. We have enough cross-network business now that we can at least offset our 3% fee with new business. So that's kind of how we, it's basically like a long-term play. As the network gets bigger, the value gets more.
Right here in the middle.
Did I answer both questions there? I think, yeah, right. Okay, yes.
Hi, so great presentation. I was one of those who called about the heavenly bed. How can I buy that? So with the VRBO, Airbnb starting to make a bit of a dent into the hotel business, do you see that there's any opportunity down the road to put loyalty programs together for those kind of purchases?
So yes, but our model, we want to help the direct connection between the hotel and guest or the VRBO owner and guest, if you will. I view like an Airbnb as an intermediary, just like Expedia and things like that, although I do like Airbnb. But we would actually, as there's platforms for vacation rental owners that are becoming more popular, like Guesty, there's other things, and as they start going to these third-party providers that are their direct tool, we can potentially help those. So basically, if you have your own listing on one of those sites, you can give the cash reward in and essentially incentivize them away from Airbnb. That's the business model. Yeah. Yeah, but we don't do that yet.
My question is, I have a small boutique hotel, and we get a lot of guests who call us and say that they want to book us with us online, but immediately the Booking.com or Expedia would just take over. And then they book the room, and they didn't realize they actually booked it on Expedia and Booking.com. So are you saying this reward program will somehow intersect that and allow them to say, go directly to the website and book the rooms?
So Gopher, definitely yes. That's a browser extension, but we have to get them to download it first. The opportunity is, though, you're always going to have intercepting and people not knowing how they're booking and that it's any different. But if they do go to your site as part of their research process, and Google's making it much easier to do that now, that's where you need to hook them. And the way you hook them is through a better deal because they don't know all the other stuff, right? And that's where we come in. Hey, same price, but extra reward for doing it here.
So you appear on our website?
Yes. Our script goes in the website and the booking engine and tees up this extra benefit for the guest who's looking around.
Over here, Jim.
Yeah.
Hi. I've been in corporate housing for about 40 years, but who's counting? And that includes short-term competing with hotels and such. And what I like, I think you're verifying something that I've always thought. Right now in this industry, they're creating these programs, these incentive programs, but they want you to pay to join. That doesn't seem logical to me. You don't pay to join your loyalty programs, do you?
No. So our model is purely transactional. One of our greatest assets is that we are hotelier focused. We want to look out for their interests first above all else. And in doing that, charging an upfront fee or something else, it doesn't sit well with them. They want it that if I make money, if you provide a direct service, I'll be happy to pay you. So we don't have an upfront fee on it. It's only the transactional volume. But the nice thing is as we help them and continue to grow, we get more and more of it. We're not locked in. Yeah.
I'm curious to hear about how you made time to innovate. You were talking about how in the hotel industry, there's no time to do it because you're busy. So because you were in that industry when you started this, how did you find the time? Talk about your journey through that a little bit, if you don't mind.
Great question. So about 20% of your time, you can do other stuff. It might be preparing stuff for corporate or budget or whatever else. I also got in the industry because I wanted to be in it long term and I wanted to help change it. So, and because I came from corporate, I could kind of not spend much time on that. So it gave me some opportunity to spend time on other projects. And honestly, like the first innovation that helped me really get my feet into the hotel innovation space was that green program. And that was directly trying to help a guy from corporate solve his problem. So yeah, but I did have to leave in order to pursue this other thing just because it wasn't compatible with the hotel chain I was in.
Okay. Hey, Jim, right here.
Yeah.
I really liked how you talked about innovating the white bed into the hotel industry. It might be a pipe dream, but how could you innovate the bed or sleeping arrangements entirely and have it be something that you test, like turning the bed into maybe a hammock option or a float tank?
I love it. Honestly, it's those types of things that people have to ask the question. I don't know how to do that. But that is a really interesting insight, right? Some people want that, and they're not getting it currently. That's an underserved market. How do you do something like that? Basically, the best way is to test it, right? Like, try something out. Don't just leave it in your head all the time. Like, just go put it out there and see what happens. And I always tell other hoteliers that, like, don't let the thought of the idea failing stop you from trying it. You know, who knows? Go set up one room type that's just a hammock and see if it sells, right? See if people come after it, you know, and then try and do some SEO that the only hammock bed in Pasadena, right? And you never know. It could change, right? And I think that's the point about the white bed is everyone told Barry that was silly. Everyone. The more silly, probably the bigger the impact. Yeah.
I may not be understanding this totally right. You mentioned something about people being intercepted. And I actually had a friend, she was trying to book a very specific room in a very specific hotel, the Marilyn Monroe room in the Roosevelt. She booked it. She thought she was on their website. She got a reservation. It was for an entirely different property, an entirely different room. Nothing whatsoever to do with Roosevelt, and she had no clue what happened. Are people actually running into a situation where I may think I'm at a very specific hotel's website and not really be there? And how does that happen?
Yes, it happens all too common. There's so much money. Think about this. If I can set up something that looks like something else and get 25% of your stay value for taking that reservation, there's going to be people all over the place trying to take advantage of that big economic, right? Oops, sorry, guys. There's been some efforts by like the American Hospitality and Lodging Association. They did a whole expose on this deceptive marketing practices and booking beds, and they tried to educate the industry. They tried to educate the consumers. It's a very hard thing to do because there's so many dollars out there to get in front of you, so many ways to get in front of you. The advice I can give is look for something saying official site. If it's official site, you can. I don't think I've seen anyone abuse that because usually Google or someone else takes them out for it.
Basically, a site made to masquerade being that site as opposed to somebody actually intercepting.
Yeah, it's not like they're technologically intercepting, but they're putting up an ad that's like reservations.com is a great example of this. It'll be like the hollywoodroosevelt.reservations.com. And you're like, oh, that URL looks like it's probably the hotel site, right?
Yeah, and that sounds like what happened to
her. Yeah. Yeah. The nice thing, again, back to the Google example, pros and cons with Google, but one of the nice things is it's giving the hotel the real estate on the top right when you Google the hotel name, and it gives you the website link. It may not always give you the booking link, but it gives you the website link, and you can pretty much trust that's the real one.
Next question. Yeah. Hi. I wanted to ask about Airbnb, getting back to Airbnb, and the inception of the Airbnbs, how did that affect the hotel business and how does it continue to affect the hotel business?
So there was a long time of uncertainty. Pretty much what all the hotel execs are saying these days, and I agree with this, is that it created a new type of supply. It's mainly competing with the VRBO and leisure market and resort destinations. And then in the cities, it's taking inventory away, maybe in an illegal way, that might come back, right? So what they're seeing in big cities like in New York or, you know, some places they still haven't outlawed it, short-term rentals, is that when a citywide comes, you know, some big convention, there's more inventory to spread out so they don't get those peak prices anymore. Probably a good thing for consumers in that particular instance. But I think that's the only real impact. Different product, mainly competing with vacation rentals.
Hey, Jim. Good presentation. I think a lot of people have learned a lot about the hospitality industry that they didn't know before. So I think this is a real good education for everyone. I'd like to take this back to the beginning. Your experience is in the hotel management business, and you came up with an idea. So you're not a software person, a developer, or a coder, or whatever. And you've described this program or the software as a SaaS, a software as a service. Can you talk a little bit about how you created that product, without that background, because we were chatting a little bit about this earlier, and how now you have an in-house team to help you with that, whereas in the beginning you had outsourced some of that and some of the challenges and the difficulties that you ran into.
So as soon as I said I have to pursue this idea, I went out to friends and family and basically got my seed round or angel round lined up. And as soon as I did that, I gave notice and I set out for a CTO search. I knew I need to have a technology person beside me. And I give a shout out. So I'm based in West Hollywood, but I'll give it a shout out to Pasadena because there's a gentleman here, a CTO named Alec from this company called Supply Frame that's here in Pasadena. And I got connected with him and we went to dinner at Sugarfish downtown LA. And I was like, okay, here's what I'm trying to do. How do I find a CTO? And Alec basically lined it up for me. He's like, okay, I like your story. Here's what you concentrate on. Here's who you reach out to on AngelList. Here's what you say. Here's what to look out for. And he shortlisted five people from AngelList that might be interesting. Long story short, after a lot of things, one of those people is my CTO I've had with for 6 years now. So that advice was golden. So it was me and the CTO from day one. We originally he was doing everything on the tech side. We were just sitting in this very small Regis office. And the first hires we did were outsourced developers just because we didn't have – honestly, it came down to, like, reputation of the developer community. A lot of people don't want to take a risk that early. My CTO was bought in. He was – he had good equity. So we had two outsourced people that worked full-time with us that was about 8 months in, a year in. And ultimately – it was too difficult with the time zones and not having people there. And we started to get our traction. So we said, let's hire people up. And we now believe in, since we have the luxury of being able to attract people, even though it's still tough, we, by the way, ask if there's any developers who want to join our team. We're still hiring. We have a great setup. We kind of believe that having everyone in the same office together is a really good way to innovate because we're all about innovation. That's what we want to do, think about things differently. And it's proven right. Like having everyone in the same office has been very beneficial for us to be fast, nimble, and generate new ideas. And so there's six full-time developers and a UI UX person now.
Follow on to that question. Besides the technology employees that are hired on the technology side, what about on the sales and marketing side? Because you're reaching out to independents, and so I would imagine you would have to have a dedicated team to try to get to those clients.
Yeah, so up until December, we had three people doing that, and now we have eight people doing that. It's basically tech and sales outreach. Those are our two main things. As the network gets bigger, the sales cycle becomes easier. But it's basically knocking on hotel doors. I mean, we don't have to actually knock on them. We can do a virtual presentation, but because that 20% time where they can focus on other stuff usually isn't going to be allocated to listening to someone pitch them on something, that's the hardest part. Once we get in front of them, we do a really good job closing them, but it's getting in front that's hard.
Jim, amazing presentation. Thank you so much for coming out.
Thanks, everyone.
The Friday Coffee Meetup Podcast is brought to you by Echo Factory. Learn more about how Echo Factory can help your business achieve rapid, sustainable growth at echo-factory.com. And get all the details about upcoming Friday Coffee Meetup episodes at fridaycoffeemeetup.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.